go to Ohio.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is Wednesday, February 24th, 2021. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports, part of Blog Talk Radio's Global Patriot Radio Network. 7 days, seven shows, eight hosts. Let's run them down real quick. Mondays, the Vito Esposito Show with Big Al, Mamma Mia No Sharia. Tuesdays, Eric with Radio Free Kafiristan. Wednesdays, you got me, Hank Jones. Thursdays, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Every Friday at noon or 1, depending on where you are, Andrew Herod with Islam in Focus, a.k.a. Conservative Casual Friday. Saturday night at 10 p.m. till midnight, Minister Osama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. And then Sundays, Eric is back with Real Interfaith Dialogue. And again, as a reminder, that's not one you can just run in and start jumping around and raising your voice. You've got to download an app. Eric's got to know who you are, why you're there, and have some reasonable assurance that you'll conduct yourself accordingly by the, you know, well, let's put it this way. You got to behave if you want to hang out with Eric. And I get it. That's the way it should be, isn't it? Well, I think, anyway. So that's it. Blog Talk Radio, 7 days, seven shows, eight hosts. Pretty cool. Hey, if you want to call into the show or listen without actually talking to me, if you can just call 319-527-6706. If you just want to listen, that's cool. If you want to talk, hit the one on your phone. Pretty simple. Hit the one. I'm not going to give you some word to spell out. Hit one. I'll get a little cue that says, hey, someone wants to talk. So we can talk. You can also listen online at blogtalkradio.com. Look for the live button and look for Global Patriot Radio. That's how you find us. You can even get an account and log into the chat like Indie Hawk KB has done. He's listening in and he's ready to roll in the chat room. We have a listener on the telephone lines as well. I believe it's Big Sis from outside of Hank Land Studios. She's, in other words, she's not right outside. She does not reside in Hank Land or Electric Hank Land Studios. Mrs. Hank, of course, is here. She is doing things in Hank Haven and working, as she points out. She's always working. She's a hard worker. I've got to say that right away. So, yeah, that's who's here right now. Other than that, let's see what's going on. Oh, the mini Aussie, our miniature Australian Shepherd, is also here. She was here earlier while I was working on pre-stuff for the show, and she was jumping all around, and then she was jumping on me. And she's an awesome little dog, but she is not allowed to take part in the show itself. Let's see what's out. You know what? You can also email me, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. I know I'm going to have to come up with a better email. Nobody ever emails me anyway, but I'm on Facebook. Just look for Hank Jones Poly Sports, P-O-L-I Sports. We know what that stands for, politics and sports. Twitter, at H Poly Sports. And the good thing about Twitter, if you just look for my tweets, at H Poly Sports, I will usually say within a day or two before the show, I'll give you the direct link. So you can, if you get it on your phone, you can just click on that or thumb on that or whatever, and you can come right to the show. It's pretty cool. I'm learning all this stuff. Some late-breaking news or recent deaths, et cetera. Rapper Prince Marky D of the rap group The Fat Boys. He died last week at the age of 52 of heart failure. Now, this isn't actually a shock. I mean, if you call your group The Fat Boys and you actually live up to it in a big way, heart failure is a possibility. But I'll tell you what, it is kind of sad. This guy was talented. I mean, he after The Fat Boys, he wrote and produced. Here's the artists he worked with, some of the artists. Mary J. Blige, J-Lo, Mariah Carey. All those that he worked with. So yeah, it's a loss of talent and creativity. And he was 1 day before his 53rd birthday. That's too young, folks. That is just too young. So let's make a, you know, if any of us, like myself, are bucking for a nickname that would get me into that group, let's resolve to get into better shape. Former Major League Baseball left-hander Juan Pizarro. He also died last week. He was 84. He had cancer. He won NL pennants as a member of the Braves in 1957 and 1958. The 1957 team also won the World Series, beating the Yankees. And then the 1958 team lost to the Yankees. He later won an NL East title with the Pirates, Pittsburgh Pirates, in 1973. I personally remember him as a Cub in the early 70s, including a couple of huge shutouts. He had a one-hitter in one of them, and then another one, he it was a shutout. I don't think it was one hitter, but they won 1-0, and he accounted for the only run, hitting a home run off of Tom Seaver. That was back when Tom Seaver was pretty much as good as any pitcher in the Major League Baseball. So yeah, that's kind of sad. Both are gone. Mrs. Hank says it sounds like Mike Seaver of the show. I don't remember what the show was. Growing Pains, maybe. Yeah, Kirk Cameron. Yeah, no relation. Trust me. Of course, the conservative world is still reeling a bit from the loss of Rush Limbaugh last week. Somehow liberals found a way to rank on Rush. Politicians, not mainly, really not, but Hollyweird. Of course, people like Rob Reiner and the gang at The View. Not surprisingly, believe it or not, some of these people played the victim card. They played the race card. And, of course, the intellectual elitist card, all played copiously. I will talk about that a little bit later. Welcome a couple other listeners. Brother Tommy is now here. T. Bodie is in the chat room, and I believe that's his phone that's also listening in. He's double duty for him tonight. Way to go, T. Listening and typing. Politics news. Florida Agricultural Commissioner Nikki Fried announced Monday she will direct all her offices under her department to ignore Governor Ron DeSantis's order for all flags lowered to half staff on the day that Rush Limbaugh is laid to rest. Here's Nikki Fried's tweet. At Governor Ron DeSantis is lowering flags to half staff for Rush Limbaugh. But he had no words for Congressman John Lewis. Priorities. Want to hear my response? Absurdity. My other response? Idiocy. Now, can anyone tell me why this is the most moronic statement? Can anyone point out just how irrelevant the quasi-comparison actually is between Rush Limbaugh and John Lewis? Would anybody else besides me be able to tell Ms. Fried why you would not, at least in Florida, lower the flag to half staff for John Lewis and why you might for Rush Limbaugh? Here's a hint, folks. It's called residency. If you'll remember, Rush had moved Palm Beach. He broadcast from Florida. He moved to Florida because it was the one place where he, on a consistent 365 days a year basis, had the most sunlight in a day, which afforded him the chance to play more golf. Now you might think, well, in the north, in the summer, it gets lighter or darker much later, Hank. I know that. I spent time in northern Wisconsin. I know how late it can be light up there. I get it. We water skied at 9 o'clock at night sometimes. Year-round, Florida has the most sunlight. Or let's put it this way. Florida, of the states that aren't crazy maniacal like California, has the most sunlight and the best golf courses. I mean, Texas has a lot of sunlight, but they don't have as good of golf courses. Now, I get it. A residency is of little consequence to big left, let alone moronic left, which is the particular branch from Ms. Fried, evidently springs. But you know what? That's one consequence of the inclusivity and diversity mantra held by Big Left. That consequence being, of course, that morons are part of all that. As long as they goose step properly, of course. Good God, will anyone in the media point up the utter absurdity of that stupid grandstanding statement? I know, stupid question. I already know the answer. But seriously, why does she even bring John Lewis into it? Unbelievable. Meanwhile, an Instagram user has raised more than $1 million for Planned Parenthood just to spite Rush Limbaugh. Kid you not, one Tommy Marcus, who goes by the username at Quentin Quarantino and describes himself as leftist scum. Hell, man, if the shoe fits, I guess. Anyway, he started the fundraising last Wednesday, the day that Rush passed away. He posted an Instagram photo of his $100 donation in memory of Rush, along with a caption, "It's what Rush would have wanted." He also, after the campaign became so successful, said, "If Rush Limbaugh was so pro-life, why did he die and posthumously raise $1.1 million-plus dollars for Planned Parenthood?" Apparently, I misjudged the whole Planned Parenthood thing. But I got an idea. Maybe we could put on a push for retroactive abortions. But I'm thinking retroactive. Mr. Tommy Marcus, come on down. Yes, you have won, Mr. Ass Clown. Yeah, Tommy Marcus, come on down, buddy. Here's kind of a shocker. In his overflowing basket of executive orders from AP Biden, most of which are nothing more than reversing President Trump's executive orders, none of them were on trade policy with China. Believe it or not. Now that that's been publicized on at least one internet site, I'm sure that's going to be rectified. But seriously, it's not one of them has been on trade policy with China yet. Now that COVID-19 cases and deaths are down, some want to, nevertheless, rein in spring break. Yeah, we wouldn't want stuff happening that might stimulate the economy. Evidently, Miami Mayor Dan Gelber says the city will institute a midnight curfew in the entertainment district and forbid alcohol on the beach. This totally makes sense. I mean, like, totally. Everybody here knows alcohol causes COVID. And the highest transmission rates are after midnight. Totally. What the hell? Why? I mean, the one time of the year when people are having fun and spending money and whooping it up, look, you know what? People are onto it now. You already had one spring break cycle last year. Just tell people to be careful. Wear masks where they can. Social distance where they can. Alcohol on the beach, that's kind of standard, believe it or not, in most beach places. It's not observed, but it's a standard rule. I mean, that people just, you know, ignore it. And as long as you have it like in a non-transparent plastic cup, they're not going to do anything about it still. I mean, come on. Anyone notice a couple possible contributors to lower COVID rates, by the way? Anyone think of any? Here are two at a minimum. One, the CDC and WHO lowered the parameters for what constitutes a positive test. Yeah, they lowered the PCR cycle from 45 to 25. In other words, rather than cycling over and over and over and over and over, they just do it over and over now. So that rather than cycling through 45 times, they only cycle it through 25. When did they do that, by the way? January 20th, 2021, or thereabouts. Yeah, exactly. Anyone noticed also there are few, if any, drive-by and or mass testing sites? Anyone heard testing brought up in a recent newscast or public service announcement? Yeah, I'm going to steal a line from Chevy Chase here and his movie Fletch. In one of his disguises as an airplane mechanic, he tells a couple of real mechanics, "It's all ball bearings these days." Well, in a very odd sense, that notion applies here. It's all vaccines these days. Now, yeah, remember my friend Rich last month, the day of the rally, the Stop the Steal rally? Remember when he said, "We are testing people. We are testing far too many people. There is no reason to test. If you don't have symptoms, you're not sick, there's no reason to test." I mean, if people are going to get it from asymptomatic things, are you literally going to test every asymptomatic person? Of course not. But we are testing much less. So, ergo, we will have many less positive tests. Duh. Now, yeah, the vaccine has probably helped as well. But, hey, you know, numbers are numbers, you know, and they're lower. So, good. So, yeah, let's then ramp it up at spring break. You know, this is ageism. I hate to say it like this. As a former college student, I'm not anymore. No, here's how scary it is. My daughter's not even young enough to be a college student anymore. But seriously, I mean, college students always caught crap at spring break places. You know, yeah, they'd cater to you during the day and do the sale, you know, the two for ones and all that stuff. But at night, you'd go into restaurants and better restaurants would still treat you like crap. Same thing here. They're treating college students, that's the majority of spring breakers, they're not treating them like two-year-olds. On that note, though, I would like to ask everyone listening, offer a prayer for Sue from New Mexico. She's a very loyal listener and contributor to several of the shows here at Global Patriot Radio. Sue got the vaccine, and while the first one apparently went okay, that she's having some difficulty after the second one. So I pray, Sue, that you recover quickly and get past this, and I ask all of you to pray for Sue as well. Just a quick one. It doesn't have to be some long, elaborate, speaking of Chevy Chase, not the one that he did in Vacation, but just a quick prayer that Sue and others that are experiencing this type of thing, that they get past this. Let's hope it's nothing more serious than some COVID symptoms. I mean, like a bad flu, a bad cold. President Trump suffered a couple very disappointing losses at the Supreme Court the other day. First, in a 6-3 vote, the election cases were dismissed without comment. However, on the dissent side, Justice Clarence Thomas made it pretty clear that the American public and the voters were shortchanged. Summarily dismissing the suits amounted to tacit approval for Democrat vote fraud going forward. The second is that prosecutors in New York shall have access to President Trump's tax records going back to, whenever, as far back as they feel they need to go to manufacture a case against President Trump. Look, we should have been expecting nothing from this, at least in terms of overturning the election. Overturning an election, that's something that Democrats and big left try to do, not conservatives. I wasn't under any illusion that this was going to, quote, reverse the election. I mean, big left spent 4+ years trying to overturn the 2016 election. All it did was create chaos, manipulation, and politicization of almost all news and information. Worse, the politicization of a pandemic that big left probably used to kill people, frankly, in the name of discrediting President Trump. Let that sink in. Seriously, big left fighting the president at every turn probably contributed to a significant portion of the 500,000 deaths that have occurred. Think about it. I mean, frankly, what they're trying to do to cover up for Cuomo is repulsive enough. On the second decision, one of President Trump's attorneys, Jay Sekulow, he's also chief counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, if that name sounds familiar. He spoke with Sean Hannity the other day on his radio show. He pretty much said that prosecutors are going to stop at nothing to try and convict President Trump, but really more their aim is to render him incapable of ever running for public office again. Just gutting him financially or cutting him off from access to perceived circles of power and influence. I've seen this type of thing where attorneys will use courts to try and break someone down financially. We've all seen it. We saw it with General Flynn, for instance. My friends, this is what big left does. Sure, it's about power. Yeah, I agree. But it's as much about, for them, it's as much about humiliation, personal destruction, and spite as it is about sheer power. Frankly, it's why we've got to be prepared to go the full measure to protect our country and ourselves. I mean, think about this. Attorney General nominee Merrick Garland couldn't even convince most senators that he is fully committed to upholding law as much as he is about committed to rewriting it in big left's image. The longer we go without any real action on things like the Durham report, the longer we go without seeing records and emails from people like Barack Obama, Plastic, Pelosi, and Hunter Biden, the more we understand what and who these people are. I mean, they're already trying to run cover for Cuomo in some cases. Not all of them, but still, there are enough still trying to run cover for him. There is a glimmer of hope in the state of Georgia, by the way. The state Senate there has passed legislation that would require voter ID before securing absentee voting privileges. Now it just needs to pass in the House. But the question becomes, really, would Governor Brian Kemp sign it? I mean, we just don't know. But, yeah, as Indy Hawk says, we need to stop the garbage going forward. You know, fool us once, fine. but no more. We just can't, we can't put up with it. We can't abide it. As sort of an afterthought to all this, federal judge Drew Tipton in Texas, he's again smacked down AP Biden on his 100-day deportation moratorium. In a real sense, this kind of throws the burden where it belongs, which is Congress. Guess what? I'll tell you what. As much as Big Left wants everyone to think that everyone is in favor of unfettered immigration, that is simply not true. Poll after poll has shown that. Now, look, while Americans are willing to give a break to kids that are brought here outside their control, to my own family, I have a nephew that's married to a girl who was brought here when she was like 12 or 15 years old or whatever. She didn't come in. I mean, she was brought here. Americans are pretty sympathetic to that. Now, they're not in favor of just granting immediate citizenship, but they are in favor they're in favor of giving a break to kids in that situation. They're not, though, in favor of wholesale granting of various government handouts for illegals, much less granting immediate citizenship. I'll tell you, that's why, frankly, as long as the Dems only have a slight majority in Congress, they'll never bring it up. You know, if you notice, the Democrats rarely bring up immigration stuff in Congress. You know, at times they've had a majority, they still don't. Still far more executive orders than there have in the last 20 years than there have been actual advances of bills. Speaking of immigration, AOC is lashing out at the Biden administration. She says this is not okay. There's a little backlash over a child immigration camp. Yeah, she's basically saying it's not okay, never has been, never will be. No matter the administration or party, our immigration system is built on a carceral framework. It's no accident that challenging how we approach both these issues are considered controversial. She's referred to as the Democrat leader. Yeah, a one-term congresswoman is a Democrat leader. What does that tell you? Because our fraught, unjust immigration system will not transform in that time. That's why, she didn't say this. This is what the Biden administration says. That's why bold reimagination is so important. And she says, DHS, Department of Homeland Security, shouldn't exist. Agencies should be reorganized. ICE got to go. Ban for-profit detention. Create climate refugee status and more. That was one of her tweets. I'll give her this. She's sick. I mean, truly sick in the head. But yeah, that's the kind of stuff that you're dealing with. Yeah. The cages are completely different now, like Indy Hawk points out. It's not. It's the same stuff. You know why it's the same stuff? Because it's what the Biden administration actually implemented. Now, here's what we're talking about, folks. Before we go off on this, these detention centers, they're not grabbing kids and throwing them in there willy-nilly. These aren't kids they're finding on the streets. What happens is when these kids and their families are detained, you cannot put kids in there with hardened adult criminals, especially adult males. In addition to, in some cases, being coyotes for some of these families and kids, they also try and hold them hostage. They also exploit them, hence terms like child trafficking and human trafficking and sex trafficking. It is not done to punish the kids. It is not done to make them live like animals. It is done to protect them from the adults. Hey, you know, look, go into any inner city homeless shelter. Let's think, like Salvation Army would be one, Coalition for a Homeless Center, those kinds of places. Very rarely is there full-blown integrated housing in those places. There are some family unit places where family units sleep in one room. In other words, they're not in Gen Pop in a homeless shelter. I'll tell you why, because the kids aren't safe from some of the, quote, males and single males. So, yes, they segregate them. They segregate the males out. The women and children are kept separately from the males in many cases. I can tell you this because I've served on the board of directors of a nonprofit, religious-based or faith-based organization that provided services to the homeless, not mass sheltering, but a men's shelter, and provided meals and other assistance. They have to separate the men in that case. They just have to. You know, we were made fun of. We had at one point surpassed serving 3 million meals at a lunch that we served every day. And one of the coalition types mentioned, well, they serve 3 million lunches. We serve 2 million meals a year. Yeah, I made the joke. I said, yeah, well, meanwhile, they also celebrated their 2 millionth brawl in the men's pavilion. I'm saying that out loud here. I would never attest to it publicly in the arena in which it was taking place. But, yeah, this is normal for children to be separated. Now, in the case when children are separated from their mothers as well, it's probably because the mother is being detained for possible criminal wrongdoing. Maybe probably aside from just illegal entry into the United States. So, yeah, when you're hearing all this, cages and stuff, listen, I'm not saying the Biden administration should get off the hook because with the previous Obama administration, they helped institute it. But the fact remains, children cannot be with adults in these centers. They've got to be protected. If we don't protect the children in this case, then yeah, we really are animals. But the grandstanding, trying to criminalize it, no. Just don't listen to AOC in this case. Just don't. Meanwhile, former acting ICE Chief Tom Homan says that under the AP Biden administration, immigration law is almost meaningless. He says as long as any administration continues to tell agencies, whether it's ICE or DOJ or even DOD, let alone DHS, that to stand, as long as they tells them to stand down or change their protocol, there's no point in enacting immigration law. The latitude taken by appointees, especially when at the discretion of commander-in-chief and appointed cabinet heads, boots on the ground are often told to ignore even basic protocol. Gee, what could go wrong? Raising the threshold for deportation or detainment, coupled with releasing prisoners from jail due to COVID. Yeah, nothing could go wrong there, folks. And now for something somewhat different, a brilliant op-ed from Roger Simon of the Epoch Times. Roger Simon is a former novelist, Oscar-nominated screenwriter, co-founder of PJ Media, and now he is the editor-at-large for the Epoch Times. This is a brilliant op-ed from him. It's not real long, but I have to read it. In a fashion we must now regard as entirely predictable. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. The title of this op-ed is View or Lies the Supreme Court Told Me. Here goes. In a fashion we must now regard as entirely predictable, the Supreme Court of the United States has dismissed, i.e. thrown out, the various state challenges to the 2020 presidential election. Any decisions on these challenges were determined by the majority to be, quote, moot, unquote, because the election had already been decided and Donald Trump had conceded to Joe Biden. Associate Justices Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch objected in varying degrees. In other words, a stolen presidential election, if it happens, we don't really know in this case, has an almost immediate statute of limitations, although the results of that election can affect hundreds of millions, if not, as in the case of the United States, nearly the entirety of humanity. This is true, apparently, for a majority of the Supremes, although all sorts of crimes, some not particularly onerous, have statutes of limitations that can go on for years. Go figure. The Supremes also cited the issue of standing, a term of legal art that has always struck me, despite all the precedents on which it is supposedly based, as wide open for biased interpretation of the most self-serving sort. One person's standing can be another's closed door, almost at will, and certainly by a vote of a majority. If I sound cynical about the Supreme Court, I have to admit I am. It's even true of the law in general, which I want to believe in and admire, but increasingly no longer do. In the real world, legal results tend to mirror A.J. Liebling's 1960 comment in The New Yorker about the press. Freedom of the press is guaranteed only to those who own one. In this case, the law belongs to those who have the deepest control of a society at the time. We want Lady Justice to be blind, but in actuality, she's a cyborg with all-seeing, rotating night vision, similar to the kind you might find on many urban street corners today from Beijing to Chicago. Using the latest algorithms to isolate presumed enemies of the state. And yes, I am no lawyer. I haven't taken even one course in the law, and spent my time in college and graduate school studying now questionable white men such as John Milton. But over my decades as a Hollywood screenwriter and then as founder and CEO of PJ Media, I employed many lawyers, some very good and some not so much, and came to understand the limitations on what they did. Contracts, it turned out, weren't worth much more than the paper they were written on unless both parties wanted to honor them. Enforcing infringements, unless they were hugely egregious, was rarely worth the expense and effort. Lawsuits, win or lose, tend to take over your life in highly deleterious ways. If you want to get involved, the Supreme Court is the apotheosis of this system. They're an organization that puts its finger in the air to see which way the wind is blowing, assuming that's even necessary, and then writes its opinions based on preconceived notions designed to offend the least number. Sadly, it's the last place to look for justice in a presidential election, or anything really that tilts against that prevailing wind. They wouldn't even, as Justice Clarence Thomas requested, explore the blatantly unconstitutional malfeasances in various states where unelected officials clearly and unlawfully superseded the legislatures in changing election law by fiat, something we would think would only happen in totalitarian countries. But it happened here, my friends, several times. We could cite the Supreme Court for dereliction of duty, or we could look elsewhere for justice. Brilliant, beautifully written, so heartbreakingly spot on. I mean, you know, here's what it really boils down to. I wasn't under any illusions, as I said, that the election was going to be overturned. I wasn't. But the fact they heard none of these, I mean, some of these things which happened, people need to be, how do I say, sent to jail, but they need to be, they need to face consequences in a court of law. I mean, as I've said it before, I will continue to say it, and I think I was the first person that actually said it, because I said it the day after the election on my show. It's not degrees of fraud here. We're not talking about degrees of fraud. If fraud exists, it needs to be pursued. We don't pursue based on, well, it wasn't big fraud. If that were the case, we wouldn't have had two impeachments. But evidently, standards and goalposts get moved like you won't know what. Hey, also from the Epic Times, the U.S. Concealed Carry Association has noted in a letter to AP Biden that his proposed gun reforms would automatically make criminals out of 105 plus million gun owners. Most of the reforms themselves are merely feel-good in nature, and in some cases aren't even factually based. One example, the demonized AR-15, which Big Left counts as a full auto rifle. It's not. The only thing that makes it seem like an assault rifle is its appearance. That's it. Otherwise, the gun has no auto capabilities whatsoever. Banning large capacity magazines is also a pointless argument, as large capacity magazines have rarely, if ever, even figured in on most of our recent mass shootings. In the case of the attack at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, The Obama administration and the FBI went so far as lying about the weapon used. Now, they claim that it was a Sig Sauer that Omar Mateen used. It has zero capability of firing at that rate, at the rate heard on audio and noted by victims and witnesses. It has zero capability to fire at that rate. But they don't mind. They lied. Who cares? In addition, they claim that was strictly an attack on LGBTQ community versus an act of Islamic terrorism that coincidentally was purpose-traded on members of that community and Latinos and Hispanics. Jen Psaki, AP Biden's press secretary, said earlier this month that AP Biden isn't afraid to take on the NRA. Yeah. We'll close out politics with this little piece, also from the Epic Times. According to the mother of Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, he wasn't hit on the head January 6th at the Capitol incursion. Also, his brother said the same thing. The family thinks Sicknick suffered a stroke before he died the day after the incursion. In spite of this, and by the way, this is not new information. This has been going around for a month or so. The Dem-led House and the House impeachment managers cited Sicknick's death as one of the reasons that Trump needed to be impeached. And several Democrat senators also cited Sicknick's death during Senate speeches. Speculation from some is that his death was cited because the other four deaths had no connection to Trump protesters being responsible. There was the young woman shot, presumably by a police officer. The other three were medical in nature. One may have been trampled, they said, but I think that person was down already for a medical reason. I'll say this. If there is a commission to, quote, get to the bottom, unquote, of what happened on January 6th, Republican representatives and senators better have balls enough to stand up and ask why House impeachment managers and Democrats kept referring to this death. We aren't talking about a mistake or bad information, folks. We are talking about malicious prosecution and perjury. Nothing less. That's what we're talking about. Going to take a quick break. I say quick because it's about a minute and a half, minute 48 seconds or something like that. Good song. Vito likes it, I know. Vito initially installed it on here for me. Brother Tommy was on the phone a little bit. He jumped off the phone, but if he were on, he'd probably know this song. Anyway, about a minute and 44 seconds. Get yourself a beer or some more coffee, wine, water. I'm getting water. Be back in a bit. 1:44. Thank you. we are back on Hank Jones Polysports, part of Blog Talk Radio's Global Patriot Radio Network. The call-in number, 319-527-6706. If you're on and want to talk, hit the 1 on your phone, and you can talk. Let's get to some sports news, happier stuff. Well, this first one isn't happy. Right now, the big news is about Tiger Woods' SUV crash and subsequent leg surgery. Here's what we know so far. He suffered multiple open comminuted fractures, tibia and fibula, of his right leg. This means bones broken in more than one place, and open fractures, meaning it broke through the skin or penetrated the skin, I should say. We also know he is awake, responsive, recovering. There's no evidence, at least at the scene, of impairment while driving. No apparent attempt to brake. He may have been traveling faster than the speed limit. He rolled the vehicle several times after crossing the road divider. He destroyed a wooden sign indicating "Welcome to Rolling Hills Estates." First officer on the scene said Woods was calm and lucid, probably due to shock. He had to be extricated through the vehicle's windshield. Was probably saved by the deployed airbags. He was also alert enough to ask first responders, and by the way, he could not walk under his own power. They had to take him on a board. He asked first responders to retrieve his golf clubs and luggage and asked them to call his manager. So there's, you know, there's that. He had a fist back surgery in December during a TV interview with CBS's Jim Nance during last Sunday's final round of the Genesis Invitational. He said he hoped to play at the Masters in April, but needed to go about it correctly. One comment he made was, "This is the only back I've got. I don't have much more wiggle room left." Look, I've never been his biggest fan, but I do know he is one of the greatest golfers ever. His talent is undeniable. His competitive engine is obvious. Yeah, to lose him from the game at this point would be awful. But it wouldn't be the first time sport has lost someone to accident or injury. But it'd be a tragic loss nonetheless for him not to have the opportunity to come back from his last back surgery or see him at the Masters as an actual competitor and not as some showpiece who just tees off and then on the first day and then packs it in after one round. Vito brought up something on Twitter, brought up Ben Hogan. Ben Hogan was in a terrible accident back in the 1940s, I think, 40s or 50s. Terrible accident, one in which he sacrificed his own safety to save his wife. Hogan came back from that. Gritty, indomitable, all those words used. Hogan came back from that. So let's hope Tiger can come back from this. I would hate for it for his own sake and for golf's sake to have it end like this for him. It would suck. We've had some movement in the NCAA basketball rankings. Very little at the top. Gonzaga and Baylor remain number 1 and 2. Baylor finally returned to the floor last night for a lackluster win over Iowa State, 77-72. Michigan, Ohio State, and Illinois remained in the spots 3 through 5. Michigan, even after Michigan's win at OSU last Saturday. Meanwhile, the Illini went down last night to Michigan State. Hawkeyes jumped to number 9 with wins over Wisconsin and Penn State last Thursday and Sunday, and the Hawks visit Ann Arbor tomorrow night for what could be a great game. One friend of mine says the Hawks have having a somewhat tough game against Penn State takes a little of the cockiness off the Hawks for tomorrow night. Maybe that they're not going in, floating on air, so to speak. So they've got to work for it. They understand that they're not perfect. Here's the full rankings. Gonzaga 1, Baylor 2, Michigan 3, Ohio State 4, Illinois 5. Next 5, Bama, Oklahoma, Villanova, Iowa, and West Virginia. And the next 5 after that, Florida State at 11, and then Houston, Creighton, Texas, and Virginia. Tech at 16, followed by Kansas, Texas Tech, USC, and Arkansas. And the final five, Loyola, Chicago, San Diego State, Wisconsin, Missouri, and Tennessee. Yeah, KB points out Hawks back in the top 10. Now, so far this week, Monday, number 18, Texas Tech lost, while number 19, USC won. Tuesday, the aforementioned Baylor win, Illinois lost. Number 7, Oklahoma also lost. Number 8, Villanova won. Number 10, West Virginia won. And number 14, Texas won over number 17, Kansas. Number 16, Virginia Tech, and number 24, Missouri lost. Tonight, Bama and Arkansas, number 6 versus number 20. They square off, and then the others, 11 at Florida State, 13 Creighton, 15 UVA, and 25 Tennessee. I'll take on unranked teams. Thursday, Gonzaga goes against an unranked, and then, of course, number 9, Iowa, at number 3, Michigan. Number 5, Illinois. Number 12, Houston. Number 4, Ohio State. Number 19, USC. And number 22, San Diego State. All go against unranked teams. For some reason, the Baylor-West Virginia game was canceled. That may have been done previously. Friday, Loyola, Chicago is the only, number 21. They're the only team going against an unranked team. Saturday's got two top 25 matchups. And then Sunday has number 9, Iowa, at number 4, Ohio State. Hopefully that's a payback game for the Hawkeyes. Yeah, nice week for the Hawks to get to number 9, and then they get to play number 3 and number 4. Yikes. But you know what? You got to play who's in front of you. Don't look now, folks, but the Blue Bloods continue to get royal treatment. Kansas not only got back in the rankings last week, then they jumped to number 17. Before they lost to Texas last night. And guess who's getting welcomed back to the bubble? Although Joe Lunardi still has them not making the tournament. Yes, 11-8 Duke is back on the bubble. Yeah, they got a win over UVA last Saturday. They got a win over Syracuse on Monday. Still, if it comes down to a 10 or 12 loss Duke versus a 3-5 loss mid-major who doesn't win their conference tournament, who do you think gets a spot in Indianapolis? Oh, by the way, at 8-13 with just two games showing on their schedule before the SEC tournament, yeah, Kentucky needs a miracle to get in, as in they have to win the SEC tournament. By the way, for those who know John Miller, formerly of Hawkeye Nation, had a show on Big Ten Network. He now has most recently started up the Hawkeye podcast. John thinks Iowa winning out, and I assume he means including the Big Ten tournament, John thinks that Iowa winning out, the Hawks would be a number 1 seed come March Madness. Yeah, while that's a reach, you know what? It's great to be talking about that on February 24th. It really is. Usually by this point in the season, Hawkeye fans know that special Hawkeye month, Franuary, is in full swing. Frankly, I can't remember the last time the Hawks had a 4-game win streak this late in the season under Fran McCaffrey. I really can't. So yeah, that's good. That's good to see them. You know, now they may have a 2-game losing streak coming up, but let's keep our hopes up, Hawk fans. In boxing, undefeated, once tied British heavyweight world champion Tyson Fury says he will definitely have 2 fights in 2021. I hope so. It's been just over a year since he knocked out Deontay Wilder to claim the WBC belt last year. He hopes to get a fight with WBA, WBO, IBF champ Anthony Joshua, especially after a third potential fight with Wilder fell through for last December. I said this before, I'll say it again. Boxing needs to add a super heavyweight division for starters. They really do. And there needs to be more than 1 or 2 fights a year from its champions. Sorry, but 1 or 2 fights a year. And I understand the COVID disruption this past year. But 1 or 2 fights a year is not emblematic of the champions of at least my generation or before. Joe Louis had his bum of the month club bouts. Sonny Liston fought regularly. Non-champions have to fight several times a year if they want to move up in the rankings. There just needs to be a more systematic way to stop this whole thing from falling completely to promoters and networks and leaving the fans with nothing. I mean, I'm sorry. You know, they need to re, you know, there used to be, wrestling still has like a world television champion, I think, some of the wrestling. The wrestling's not real, I get that. But boxing had that for a while, a world television champion. Not every organization, but, you know, a couple of them did. A guy would fight once a month or more. This once a year or twice a year, that's, I'm sorry, the champions don't. Oh, boxing's a brutal sport, but football players are out there every week in season. So, no, don't tell me that. Speaking of college football, former Nebraska quarterback Luke McCaffrey is not following his brother Dylan to their dad's school, Northern Colorado. Luke has instead opted for Louisville. Dylan, his younger brother, left Michigan last year before the season. Luke finished the 2020 season as the backup to Taylor Martinez at Nebraska. We'll see. I'm not holding out much hope for Louisville making the... I mean, Luke McCaffrey's okay, but he's not beating out Taylor Martinez. He's not great, that's for sure. Former Oregon starting quarterback Tyler Shoff is headed to Texas Tech. He's going to have 3 years of eligibility remaining as a grad transfer. Shoff started all seven games for Oregon last year, but he lost playing time to his backup, Anthony Brown, in the, both in the Pac-12 conference championship game and in the loss to Iowa State in the Fiesta Bowl. So this one's weird. Former Wisconsin wide receiver Quintez Cephas is suing the school, accusing the school of using him as a scapegoat in a sexual assault investigation, which led to his expulsion from the school. He says the school violated due process rights and Title IX provisions and breach of contract. He was investigated and later expelled after an accusation by two female UW students. He was acquitted, though, by a jury. Subsequently, he was readmitted to Wisconsin and to the football team. He recently completed his rookie season with the Detroit Lions. They took him in the fifth round of the 2020 draft. One of the issues, according to his lawyer, is that the incident, despite his acquittal, dropped his draft stock. And so he says the point, at this point, the goal is really about setting a precedent so that athletes aren't treated this way in the future, i.e. presumption of guilt along with punishment before a criminal trial takes place. By the way, about 5 months ago, one of the accusers also filed suit against Wisconsin for reversing Cephas's expulsion and allowing him back on the team. Man, that's a mess. That is a mess, that's for sure. Finally, in the Hawkeye victory last Sunday over Penn State, Hawkeye big man Luca Garza became the all-time leading scorer for the Hawkeye men's team. I say men's team because somebody pointed out Megan Gustafson is actually the all-time leading scorer in all of Hawkeye basketball. Still, two things of note. Luca eclipsed the great Roy Marble, but he did it in 15 less games. You heard that. He did it in 15 less games. He's also the first Big Ten player in Big Ten history to record 2,000 points, 800 rebounds, 125 blocks, and 100 career three-point field goals. I'd say that's quite a career. Absolutely. He's been fun to watch. I hope the Hawks don't blow it by an early exit in the NCAAs. I fear that with the way things have been the last couple coaches, the last three coaches, frankly. So, yeah, I mean, Luca Garza, I mean, it was a great play that happened on two. It was like a pick and roll. He got behind the defense and just got an easy bucket. He's getting blanketed now by teams. Teams are just, they're not even hiding the fact that they're hacking at him. As long as Hawkeyes get some outside shooting, you know, they can go far. But no, it's not a matter of how far Luca Garza will take them, because Luca Garza will put a team on his back. But frankly, 40 points a game, Luca Garza, means for a less winning Hawkeye team, 20 to 30 points a game, Luca Garza, with one or more of the guards hitting lights out from three or from outside, makes for a better Hawkeye team overall, that's for sure. We're going to get to Poly Sports here. looks like former U.S. Olympic gymnast Michaela Maroney has gone from the frying pan to the fire, as they say. Yeah, she was one of the victims of that Michigan State and USA Gymnastics scumbag trainer, Dr. Larry Nassar. Now she is showing up on social media and internet websites as being affiliated with the Church of the Master Angels. Apparently some folks liken it to Scientology. Others just say it's just a basic cult. One photo shows Michaela Maroney wearing a large silver pendant necklace from the Church of the Master Angels, which on its website describes itself as a unitary, non-denominational, faith-based community church. Naturally, various news organizations have reached out and just as naturally have been stonewalled or received no answers or acknowledgement at all. It's based in Boone, North Carolina, and also has a branch in Los Angeles where Ms. Maroney lives. Its leader is one Master John Douglas. He's an Australian. He claims he had a clairvoyant awakening at the age of 9. He claims he can see the real cause of diseases in the body. There have been claims of healing from Lyme disease, cardiac sarcoidosis, and even the HIV virus, and that Master John Douglas sees and knows things about HIV and other diseases that even the medical community doesn't know. Newsflash. Lyme disease can be caught early enough, of course. Lyme disease can be knocked out with a simple antibiotic. And they are arresting advancement of the HIV virus in patients with their drug cocktails, be that as it may. Dr. Christopher Hartnett, he is the chair of the Church of Master Angels International Foundation, has apparently been defensive in interviews and closed one interview with a statement that the pendant Ms. Maroney wears is a Metatron, and that Metatron is the angel who protected Christ while on earth. Don't look in the Bible. Metatron isn't there. Metatron does appear in some Talmudic and Kabbalistic writings, and some say he is an angel version of Enoch. But in Christianity, no, humans do not become angels. They are two completely different beings. Angel getting his wings in It's a Wonderful Life, great story, but biblically there's no basis for it. Angels are different than humans. Humans do not become angels. Now, I'm not sure where all this will lead, but suffice to say, given what she went through as a gymnast, the fact Ms. Maroney has grasped onto literally any form of faith isn't a surprise. Let's just hope for her sake it isn't destructive. In baseball, Seattle Mariners president and CEO Kevin Mather was pretty much forced to resign after remarks he made at a meeting with a Rotary Club in Bellevue, Washington on February 5th. Mariners chairman and managing partner John Stanton, he will assume Mather's duties, at least temporarily. He expressed disappointment, said Mather's comments were inappropriate and didn't represent the organization's feelings about players, staff, or fans. Now, here's an excerpt of some of Mather's statements. In his remarks to the Rotary Club, Mather spoke about former Mariners pitcher Hisashi Iwakuma, who was hired in January as a special assignment coach with the club, and his need for an interpreter and his English skills. Quote, "For instance, we just hired Iwakuma. He was a pitcher with us for a number of years. Wonderful human being. His English was terrible," Mather said. "He wanted to get back into the game. He came to us. We quite frankly want him as our Asian scout interpreter. What's going on with the Japanese league? He's coming to spring training. And I'm going to say, I'm tired of paying his interpreter. When he was a player, we'd pay Iwakuma X dollars, but we'd also have to pay $75,000 a year to have an interpreter with him. His English suddenly got better. His English got better when we told him that." Speaking about minor league outfielder Julio Rodriguez, who is ranked as the number 9th overall prospect in Major League Baseball, he said, "Julio Rodriguez has got a personality bigger than all of you combined. He is loud. His English is not tremendous." Mather addressed the team's payroll and watching the financial bottom line. He said he believed top prospects Jared Kelenic and Logan Gilbert likely will not start the season with the team as a way to manipulate their major league service time and keep them under club control longer. Mather said the club attempted to sign Kelenic to a long-term contract, and they were rebuffed in their efforts. Stanton insisted roster decisions have not been predetermined, and general manager Jerry DePoto and manager Scott Service will make the final call. Mather also said longtime third baseman Kyle Seager would be a future Mariners Hall of Famer, but was also overpaid. Seager is in the final year of his contract with the Mariners and will be their highest player at $18 million. His contract includes a club option for 2022. Look, I know people may want to jump all over the Mariners or the media, but in this case, it's completely unwarranted. You do not throw players, staff, or fans under the bus. You just don't. Had Kevin Mather not resigned, the Mariners would have been foolish to keep him around. As front office person, especially the CEO, ranking on players or coaches and staff is a surefire guarantee of failure at the team level. Look, it's one thing to have one's own thoughts. It's quite another to put the whole front office in the spotlight by doing that and saying that. Anything based on race, origin, or on-field performance, those are discussions that you hold privately with the person or persons involved. A player, trainer, coach, and yes, an interpreter should hear about these issues from the source. Hearing it from a news report, especially a news report where the person in question is addressing a damn Rotary Club, is beyond low class and beyond crappy. Forget First Amendment rights. Let's just get right to stupidity here. Two coaches ago, the Iowa basketball team was coached by a guy named Steve Alford, former Indiana Hoosiers player, sort of a golden boy coach. He had successful stops. He was Division III runner-up, national champion runner-up at Manchester, and then he got Southwest Missouri State to the Sweet 16 before he got the Iowa job. He got the Iowa job after AD Bob Bowlsby and the Iowa Honchos decided not to renew the contract of somewhat popular coach Tom Davis. Look, Alford did not make many friends in Iowa City. He started out saying that he was in Iowa to raise the bar, which he never did. He also brokered a deal that kept a player from facing a rape or sexual assault charge, including having a meeting with the victim. That player suffered a redshirt year. Yeah, that was it. Then promptly got booted from the team and the school when he had another incident, stalking his ex-girlfriend, stalking and harassing an ex-girlfriend. He then blew any equity he built up in the 2005-06 season when the Hawkeyes, as a number three seed in the NCAA tournament, coming off a Big Ten conference tournament title, promptly lost to a 14 seed, blowing two 17-point leads. Not one, blowing two 17-point leads in that game. He also waltzed around Iowa City expecting to be treated like royalty, allegedly expecting freebies from businesses around town. But above all that, he did something that pissed off fans. He threw players under the bus, usually immediately after games in the post-game press conference. He threw the school under the bus numerous times, the last time being his announcement as head coach at University of New Mexico, where he said it was great to, quote, finally be at a basketball school, later implying that Iowa was always put football first. Well, yeah, frankly, you look at the difference between Kirk Ferentz and Steve Alford. Yeah. So, no, folks, Kevin Mather hasn't had his First Amendment rights trampled at all. What he did, he acted like a clown. He talked like a clown. He behaved like a clown. Worse than that, he treated his players, his staff, and his organization like clowns. So, really, he had no choice but to he had no choice except that afforded most circus clowns. Move on to the next town. T-Bodie, is that when you say charges will not be there will not be charges? Is that against Tiger? Are we talking about something else? Not Kevin Mather, I assume. Yeah, I'd hoped Vito. I would hope you welcome Vito to the chat room. I was hoping Vito might call in actually, because I would love to hear his take on Tiger. Vito is an avid golfer, folks. Vito has come very close to qualifying for the U.S. Men's Senior Open on multiple occasions. Vito is pretty much a scratch golfer. I have played golf with Vito. I can attest. I know Vito is a good golfer. Better than good. He's an excellent golfer. Another guy, one who couldn't be here today, but Hawkeye Mike usually listens on the phone. He's also an avid golfer. We played a lot in college, and he's also an excellent golfer, as was Hawkeye Mike's late father, who was, I believe at one point, a senior men's champ or a champ of some sorts, a club champ, if nothing else. But I think he played in the Iowa Open a couple times. But anyway, I wanted to hear their thoughts on the phone of Tiger's stuff. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know that Tiger's going to be able to come back from this. I certainly hope so. Sounds like with no charges being filed, but that's not an issue anyway. From what I read, I didn't think it was. But again, it's really more about his well-being and whether he can make it back. Also in polysports, Kansas GOP Senator Jerry Moran has filed a bill that would allow college athletes to benefit from name, image, and likeness, sign endorsement deals with certain restrictions, expand medical coverage, and allow transfer and draft entry without losing eligibility. Here is more. Here's from his statement to ESPN. It is vital to establish a consistent national standard for universities and student athletes, Moran told ESPN. This bill strikes an appropriate balance as we work to empower amateur athletes while maintaining the integrity of college sports that we all know and love. Yeah, that's the last statement they talked about. Without transfer and draft entry without losing eligibility. I'm on board with one transfer without losing eligibility. There are a lot of reasons. There have been times when they've given guys immediate eligibility and not to other guys. Make it a policy, one free transfer, regardless. If a guy transfers a second time, I'm thinking like a guy like Oliver Martin who went from Michigan to Iowa and then to Nebraska. I think you need to have a little more reason for immediate eligibility. Maybe the graduate transfer thing is one possible reason. But I think just to grant immediate transfer blanket one time couldn't hurt. Okay, I think we've got on the line. Folks, welcome Vito to the show. Vito, how you doing?
Hey, good, Hank. How you doing?
Doing good. How's your golf game, by the way?
It's getting there.
Getting there?
Getting there.
Are we talking another run at the Open?
This year, yeah, probably be my last shot at it.
Really? Why?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, you get the. You come to the realization that while you're good locally and good here, it's a different game when you get to that next level. But
yeah,
I'm going to try and continue to try. You know, playing a couple of little mini events, mini tours, and try it again this year. It's going to be played at the Senior Open is going to be played at Omaha. Omaha Country Club. I think it's owned by Warren Buffett. I know, but it's really a nice course. I've played it before, and it is a very nice course. I do like
it. Oh, cool. What were you doing in Omaha? What took you to Omaha?
A qualifier several years ago.
Yeah, okay. Mrs. Hank was there a couple of years ago, and she went to two states at once because Omaha borders across the river with Council Bluffs, Iowa. So there's like this bridge, I guess, and Mrs. Hank did both states, but she did not hang out with Warren Buffett. So anyway, what's your thought on this? You think Tiger comes back from this?
Boy, I'll tell you, reading what kind of surgery he had on his leg, you know, and the first thing I thought about was Ben Hogan. You know, Ben Hogan was in a worse more horrific crash to save his wife and breaking pelvis and such. But, you know, the guy just had another back surgery in December, and he's healing from that, or January, and he's healing from that, and then this accident occurs. I'll tell you, he came back from the broken leg, flavored a lot in his left leg, and that's the turn leg, and he was able to play. It's going to be tough. It really is. I hate to see it. I think he's been great. He's certainly been great for the game, and he's been a great ambassador for professional golf, and every professional golfer owes him some gratitude for the amount of money, the purses that they play every week. So I would hope he comes back. I really hope he comes back.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned it was the surgery was on his right leg, correct?
This one, yeah, the right leg for this accident, and he had the last one, I believe, was a left leg, is what he had done back in 2010 or 11 after the U.S. Open that he won. He beat Rocco.
Oh, okay. So hopefully, yeah, as you said, the left leg is the turn leg, the pivot leg. So hopefully that's the fact that it's not the left leg is – but, yeah, coupled with back surgeries, I mean – I was reading earlier one of his quotes to last Sunday to Jim Nance, where he said, "I've only got one back. I don't have a lot of wiggle room left." I mean, was this the wiggle room? Did he blow out the wiggle room? Hopefully not. I mean, look, as I said, I'm not his biggest fan, but yeah, you're right. He's great for the game. He's been great for the game. He's been he's brought visibility, if nothing else. He's brought great visibility to the game. And you're right. I think the other players owe him a little bit of thanks for what he's brought for the whole, like the increased purses and just the visibility. So, and frankly, on a world
without
stage.
Without a doubt. On a world stage, yes. That's exactly right, on a world stage. I mean, when he went over to Japan or China you don't realize is that when he goes and plays in the Middle East, Dubai, these people are paying him an appearance fee, or paid him at that time appearance fees. So, I mean, he's making an extra $2 million there, but they don't care because, his attraction was so good. His stock was so good. And, the players are appreciative. And when you hear Justin Thomas who is his friend, but, how emotional he got over here in the news and stuff. And it really is. They have a deep appreciation for the guy.
Yeah, it's sad. I hope, I hope he comes back. You mentioned, we talked about Ben Hogan. And frankly, at the time with Ben Hogan, I don't remember exactly when that was. Was that in the 40s or 50s?
I think it was 50. 52 or 54 or something like that.
Okay. So, medical science has advanced greatly since then. So,
yes,
we'd like to think that there's a lot more that can be done. Now, sometimes there is stuff that just doesn't, it's hard to come back from. But hopefully in this case, it's just, if you're just talking about broken bones, then, yeah, that can heal and that can be, it may take him a little while. But I hate to see him have his last Masters be one of those ceremonial hit off the first tee, play around and then walk off the course. That would be tough for him. It would be tough for him to go out that way. I think.
It will be. And you know what? Isn't it fitting? It's almost like the golf guy said, okay, you got 82 wins. You tied Sam Snead next, and it's like, I don't know when we'll see somebody, match that record and that talent. I was talking with talked to Holger on Sunday, they were going back and forth in the tournament between the two, three players. And you think back to when Tiger was in his prime. If Tiger had a 3-shot lead going into Sunday, he won by 8. He just didn't have to close the door. And, that type of talent, it's really cool to watch. And I'm not sure we're gonna see that again. We'll see it again. I'm sure we'll see it again. I mean, look, you had Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, and then Tiger Woods. So you had those players, but you also had Ben Hogan, Sam Snead, Byron Nelson back then. So there was a great crop of golfers. So hopefully we'll see.
Yeah.
That.
And frankly, it may be the other players on the tour that help him come back. You know, that'll be a key thing.
Yes.
You know, how much they push him and help him to recover. So,
great point. That's an excellent point.
Yeah, so let's hope, you know. Anyway, well, hey, thanks for being on, but I have a couple of I have a rant
right.
I need to get to, so I'm keeping you on, but I'm just gonna, you know. Thank you, sir.
Hey, man, you have a good one.
Ah, the great Vito Esposito, one of our station managers here at Global Patriot Radio. He and Big Al, he had a great call with Holdger. He mentioned Holdger. Holdger comes on and listens, and Holdger called back on the show a month or so ago. They had a great call Monday night. It wasn't about golf. It was about Holdger said he's gotten off Twitter for a while, and he's just sort of been complacent, he admits. But he says, you know, the one thing that in our political system that he's seen is that we've seen the lengths to which the left will go, to which big left will go. They just know they don't know bounds. They have no scruples. They have no conscience. They have, you know, they just, big left will do whatever. And, you know, until the Republicans and conservatives get a little bit more backbone, you know, we may be dealing with these kinds of things. I mean, we're going to have to, and as other people have said, it's going to start at a local level. We need to go to the states where some of this stuff happened. You need to go to the localities where it happened. You're never going to change Detroit. You're never going to change Philadelphia itself. You're never going to change Chicago. But if you get states to, you know, where there is conservative and or Republican leadership in those places, then, yeah, you can start to affect some change. So, okay. I talked before about Rush Limbaugh. Finally, I'm going to close with this. I want to address those from Big Left who think it is cool or eye-opening or enlightening or even brave. Yeah, that's how twisted some of them are. To rank on Rush Limbaugh after his death, look, whether it's meathead Rob Reiner or Black Lives Matter warlord Sean King or some of the chicks on The View. And yes, I'm talking about you, Whoopi Cushion, Joy Behaug, and Megan McCow. All this stuff of he was a racist, a bigot, a chauvinist, a warmongering evil man is crap. And for some of the others, saying you're glad he's dead or you wish others would also die is pretty much, it's par for your disgusting world, but not in a real human world. Look, it isn't noble, it isn't humorous, and it certainly isn't brave. So while you're still alive, I'm going to say this straight out to the ladies on The View. Say this to Whoopi. Talking slow, pretending you're being deliberate, or pretending that you're in deep thought doesn't mean that what you're about to say is eloquent or intelligent. It just means that you take longer to say dumb, mean stuff than other dumb, mean people. To Joy Behaug, I can only say this. Go away. You're gross. You're repugnant. You're disgusting. You insult the dumbest people on this planet with your lack of intelligence. You insult the rudest people on this planet by blowing them out of the water, becoming the rudest person in history. Just go away. And to Megan McCow, this is going to seem like a personal attack. Look, when you weighed less, 88 pounds ago, you were probably cute. Your blonde hair, your big rack, and your smile going on TV, it made you tolerable. Look, your dad was a definite hero and servant to his country. When he was running against Barack Obama and you were part of that campaign, it made you tolerable. It did. You're a fat cow. You blame Sarah Palin for your dad losing. You don't like Rush because he gave straight up facts. But guess what? You're no longer a cute blonde with a big rack. You're just a fat cow on a show with other fat cows. You offer less now than any point in your career. Ladies of The View, going after someone after they've died is rude at a minimum. It's disgusting. To The View people as a whole, what's your show about anyway? Nobody I know, nobody has ever watched enough of that show without immediately changing the channel. Actual synopsis of what the hell you all are talking about. seriously, or what you're booing about, frankly. I mean, literally, it's like the Steve Martin rant in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I could stand days of insurance seminars, stand days of home improvement shows. People would say, how can you stand it? It's like, oh, the only other thing on was The View. And they'd be like, oh, yeah, I know what you mean. Oh, whoa. Seriously, that's how bad it is, apparently. Because I've never watched it long enough to know. I only looked and saw and heard some clips of what they said. Seriously, going after someone who has died, telling other people that supported him or felt like that you wish they would follow suit and die as well. So much for unity. So much for diversity and inclusion. What you are, twisted, sick people. Here we're canceling people like Gina Carano, and The View is still on? What the hell? So I say this to close. Thank you, Rush Limbaugh, for inspiring us to be better, deeper, and more analytical thinkers. Thank you for telling us the truth. Thanks for blazing a trail. And may we, at some point, find somebody who does it half as well as you did. It's enough for me tonight, folks. I'm going to close you out with a little wrestling theme, the New World Order theme, because it's cool. It sounds a lot like Hendrix. So anyway, y'all have a good night, and we will talk to you next week. I want to thank Indy Hawk KB, T Bodie, and Vito for being here in the chat room. Big Sis, Brother Tommy, T Bodie, and Vito for being listening in on the phone, and Vito for a great phone call and that more insight into what Tiger's going on with. And let's all get behind Vito as he strives to make the U.S. Senior Open. I know it's hard to believe Vito's old enough to play in the U.S. Senior Open, but he is evidently. So y'all have a great week. Be safe. And of course, the biggest thanks to Mrs. Hank and little Aussie for being here as well in Electric Hankland. Have a good one, folks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.